from the Atlas Mountains in Morocco, from me and my Brompton, it's welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, when racing is easier than training, we will look at a stage of a World Tour race that was so easy, we could all have kept up, even Dan.
Exactly. Plus, an update on Connor's progress at the epic Atlas Mountains race, the bill that could ban cycling from Iowa, science that shows that car drivers don't understand what cyclists are signalling to them, and we reveal the most successful bike in the history of cycling. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that the real Slim Shady is actually Tadej Pogačar. He dyed his hair blonde last week and now bears a rather uncanny resemblance to the rapper whom he listened to religiously, apparently, as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, he must have found the hair dye when he was cleaning out his closet.
Genius, Si. Yeah, genius.
That's just the way I am.
Crikey. Moving on.
Can I just say that those mean nothing to me, by the way? Are they Eminem lyrics?
Where did you get them from then?
Just, you know,
from the top of your head.
We also learned that Lance Armstrong is back again, but this time in Hollywood.
So somebody has bought the rights to his life for a brand new film. Lance himself is going to be played by Austin Butler.
Don't know who he is either, actually.
Neither do I.
I mean, I Googled him, but I don't. It's not familiar.
No.
Apparently, according to Deadline, it will combine this film, ready for it, elements of F1 the movie and Martin Scorsese's Raging Bull and Wolf of Wall Street. The mind boggles slightly, but it will cover the life and career of Armstrong, capturing the highs and lows of his, as they say, extraordinary journey.
I mean, it is extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, yeah.
Can they dramatise bike racing, though, without it being cringeworthy, is my question.
It is a challenge. Mm. I think for the nerds out there, such as ourselves, I probably don't think they can.
No, I've got my doubts as well. So. Yeah. Finally this week, we learnt that professional level racing is back in full swing and there is one race at the very top level of the sport that we could all keep up with.
Even you.
Even me, yeah. As we established in the intro. It is the UAE Tour.
Yeah, now this time last year, we actually did a GCN show around the men's race that talked about how there is one race that makes Tadej Pogačar slower, and that's because he finds it so easy, and that was the reason why he was attacking on stages that were really there for the sprinters, weren't they? And so you can probably guess what this race was.
Yeah.
The UAE Tour, yeah.
Now, the premise was that when the wind doesn't blow there, it's a flat stage, and so it's so easy to sit in the wheels that the riders risk going home detrained, i.e. their average workload during the race itself is significantly less than their average workload would have been had they just stayed at home training.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds weird, doesn't it? How can a race in which your job is to try to win be that easy? We'll look into that bit shortly, but first up, we're going to dive into stage two of the women's UAE Tour from last week.
Yeah, stage two specifically, because it was ridiculously easy from what we've seen. Like, I can't believe how easy that particular stage was. So what sparked my interest initially in this was a quote on Instagram from Marlon Reusser. She crashed heavily, unfortunately, towards the end of stage two. And in her Instagram post afterwards, she said that was down to there being so many fresh riders and therefore fresh legs in the last 5 kilometres at the end of a stage where she'd averaged less than 100 watts, her quote.
Wow. Now, for those of you who have never ridden with a power meter, we'll try and put that into some kind of context. Mm. So on my local roads, even if I chose the flattest route possible, I would struggle to keep my average power under 100 watts. Even if you ask me to.
So it's hard.
To average under 100 watts, I would be going so slowly that I could barely describe it as a ride.
And we're not exaggerating,
no.
I guess I'd say. Another example, I think most of you at home are aware that my wife Lorraine is currently doing 2 Zwift sessions per week. Her Zone 2 ride on the Tuesday, which you can all welcome to join, by the way.
During work hours.
During work hours, lunchtime.
Yeah.
Anyway, on those Zone 2 sessions, for 45 minutes, she's averaging about 90 watts. And for context, she has no history in cycling beyond what we all do on bikes as a kid, and she's in her 50s.
Yeah, and she's also quite petite, isn't she? Like, I don't know what her weight is, but it's not going to be much.
No, it's not very much at all.
No. Yeah. So, did you just mention her age? I thought you weren't allowed to mention her age.
Well, no, I didn't mention, not exactly. I haven't given her exact age away, I don't think. I can't remember what I said now.
Well, you gave quite a bracket.
Yeah, it was a big bracket. She's on the lower end of whatever the bracket was that I gave. Okay. Anyway, moving very quickly on.
You're still in trouble.
What I'm basically trying to say is that an average power under 100 watts is stupidly easy for a pro rider. So much so that I was starting to question whether Marlon Roycer was being true, was saying true things.
You said Marlon Roycer was lying?
Not lying, more like exaggerate. I thought she might be embellishing for the purposes of the Instagram posts she made. You know what these influencers are like? These
she's
days.
Not an influencer, she's a pro. Very different. Anyway, stop digging.
Yeah, I'm digging myself a very big hole here. Anyway, so we did some research on the rest of the riders that did that stage.
It was you. I didn't do it.
Roycer did not upload her file to Strava as far as I could see them.
Because she was trying to cover something up.
I don't think so, based on what we're about to say. But plenty of other riders did upload Strava, some of them including their power files as well.
Yeah, including Movistar's Flaherty Mackay. So the average, the 147 kilometre stage took her 3 hours, 44 minutes. So an average speed of over 39k an hour, which is not too shabby.
No, it's quite fast.
But her average power didn't seem to match, did it?
No.
93 watts.
Double figures, not triple, which I just find mind-blowing. So I still didn't believe it when I saw that slide.
You thought she was lying on her Strava as
well? Basically, yeah. Well, I thought the data might just be wrong. Okay. Bad power meter or whatever. So I dug even deeper, just like I'm digging myself a deeper hole here. Anyway, I stumbled upon Aude Bianique's file.
Okay.
And she was at least in triple figures when it came to her power output, just 105 watts, she averaged.
It's still pretty low, isn't it?
Alicia González Blanco averaged 111 watts, Si. Okay. Marta Pavese, 119 watts.
Wow, yeah.
Robin Clay averaged 125 watts.
What was she doing then? That's ridiculously high.
Wasting energy. But then, Si, it got worse. It went the other direction. So Quinty Schoens averaged 78 watts.
No.
And Nicola Noskova averaged 81 watts.
What?
Per stage. Although, according to Pro Cycling Stats, she weighs 42 kilograms, which is quite light. But nevertheless, okay. I'm going to double down and say, I actually do think I could have kept up on that stage. Maybe until the last K, but I could have kept up for the rest of it.
I mean, even I think you could have kept up on that stage. Like, obviously, you are almost double her weight these days. And I don't know what your aerodynamic drag would be. But in a bunch, on a flat road, your weight is going to be... Well, of marginal importance, I would have thought.
Yeah, not inconsequential, but once you're up to speed, you're fine, aren't you?
Yeah, so what do you think you'd have had to have done?
130, I'd have thought, based on those powers.
I mean, on a good day, you could probably do that now.
The form is 4 hours, yeah, touch and go, but should be able to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I feel like I know what this digging is all about, Dan.
What?
Well, because I'm very clever. No, you are going to do a Grand Fondo, aren't you, next week? In Dubai.
I am, yeah, the Spinnies 92, Si.
Yeah, and so this is you hoping, probably praying, that it's going to be easy enough for you to sit in the wheels so that you can keep up in the elite category, which you very foolishly entered yourself into.
I don't know why I've entered that category.
Old habits die hard?
I mean, there may be a grain of truth in what you're saying, Si. Yes, old habits do die hard. I'm not going to lie there. Last year, I was looking into this and researching this as well. So the front group in that Grand Fondo averaged 45 kilometres per hour. It sounds really fast to me, and it is quite fast. But given that you can now, I can see, do 39 kilometres per hour for less than 100 watts, maybe like 140 for my size, I have got hope now.
I think you'll be fine. Do you know what you need, right?
Go on.
Really fast tyres.
Yeah.
Chain racks.
Check.
Yeah, you got that sorted already.
Somebody else is going to sort it for me.
And then get aero.
Check.
You're pretty aero these days.
I'll do some stretching before I go. It's a bit hard these days.
Well, those muscles are not very aero. Nah. As in all these extra bits that you've
quite rounded.
I'm not sure that's how it works.
Because I've done the bulking, but not the bit that comes after the bulking where you get leaner.
The cutting.
Yeah, I haven't done the cutting yet, so they're not sharp, they're quite smooth.
Can you do that in a week?
I don't know where we're going with this. Mm. Anyway, what I will say is you haven't instilled me with confidence.
So great, thanks.
With all those upgrades,
that.
I should be right. In all seriousness though, like we said earlier, those roads out in the UAE in particular can be incredibly fast and easy to ride on, especially when you're on a group / peloton. They're very wide, the surface is generally very good, there is barely a gradient in sight on a lot of the roads there, and so if there's no wind as well, you basically get sucked along in the bunch, don't you?
Yeah, but you have to pedal half the time, do you? And, I mean, presumably, you've experienced something like that before in Qatar. right? You roast that?
I don't think I did. I think there was always enough wind blowing in the 2 years that I did Qatar that there was a threat of crosswind, and therefore it was reasonably hard.
That's weird, because you actually did quite well.
I know, yeah.
Top 10.
Unbelievable scenes. But I do remember one stage at the tour of Qinghai Lake, which you did as well, one of the years.
I like to forget that I've done the tour of Qinghai Lake. Yes, that was a dark moment in my past.
Anyway, I do remember that on one stage there, that must have been fairly flat, I was actually having a competition with myself to try and average under 100 watts. So it was obviously fairly flat. The other thing at Qinghai Lake is its altitude. So the air is less dense, so you do go sort of reasonably fast for much less power.
Yeah.
Didn't quite manage it because the power went up for the final sprint. You know, I wasn't in the sprint, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I was going to ask, because sometimes looking at average power can be a bit of a red herring, can't it? Because as we know, even if the average is low, there can be points that are so hard that we'd get dropped there and then.
I do know what you mean, but no, there were no parts like that from what I could see on stage two of the UAE Women's Tour last week, until basically they ramped it up for the final 5 kilometres or so to the finish line for the sprint. And at that point, yes, it was hard, and yes, I would probably have been dropped at that point.
That's all right, though. You would have made it in the time cut.
I would have made it in the time cut.
Good to know, though, doesn't it? It shows, doesn't it, how different races can be. As in, like, the spectrum of them. Which I'd say is a good thing in general, isn't it? And it's also kind of how silly it is to compare average speed. Yeah. So 35k an hour on a calm, dry day on closed roads in the UAE is very different to 35k an hour in midwinter on rough and grippy roads of northern Europe.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess the other question we need to ask is whether it is good for pros to go that easy. And it's a fairly easy answer, I'd say. Probably not. Well, it's quite nice to have races that easy, isn't it? At least I certainly enjoyed an easier than expected stage or race, but it doesn't do much for your form.
It's also a bit boring to be in the bunch.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's different. If you've had loads of really hard stages before, an ice easy stage like that comes as a very welcome relief, doesn't it?
It does.
You've only had 2 stages and they weren't that hard before that.
Nope.
Anyway, I think it's also accentuated for the women's race because they're only there for 4 days. So you've got a day of travel at least either side, plus at least a day of easy riding before the start of the race. So if you have a super easy stage as one of the four, as they did, there is a very high chance you're going to go home with less overall load than you went over with in the first place.
I have a feeling that won't be the case for you. Dan.
No, probably not. But then I've been doing an hour and a half per week on Zwift. So, if I can keep up on that ride, it's going to be a miracle.
Well, I can't wait to find out. Right, let us know your thoughts about this. Are these stages too easy? Should the organisers make more of an effort to put some difficulties in there? Or is it okay to have an easy day or two at the start of the season?
Let us know in the comment section down below. And whilst we're at it, what is the easiest race that you've ever done at home there, and what was your average power? I'd be interested to see what the easiest one was.
Yeah. You know, going back to Tour of Qinghai Lake, me and Jeremy Powers once had to do an impromptu after-dinner speech, and we did it about how how the 2009 Tour of Qinghai Lake was possibly the worst moment in both of our lives.
Oh, really? You did it in 2009 as well, did you?
2009.
Oh, was that the only time you did it?
Yeah, I only did it once.
Oh, so we never raced it at the same time?
Yeah. The year I did it was really hard.
Clearly, with my... I actually had decent results there, so...
I remember looking at the results.
The years I did it, it wasn't that hard.
I remember looking at the results when I went out there, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like,
I should be able to win that.
Well, it's just, you know, I remember looking at it, and then after the race, I was like, how on earth did he do that? Oh, yeah, fair play, mate, fair play. Oh, I'm not allowed to say that, am I?
Oh, you say that too much, do you? Oh, get the editor to cut that out.
Yeah.
/ repeat it.
Fair play, mate, fair play.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with some news from the Atlas Mountain Race. Conor Dunn, as you know, has been training hard for this, to the extent that he was in a bit of a hole, wasn't he, before he left. And we were all really quite worried about him.
A hole big enough we couldn't even see his head. It says something, doesn't it? But he did get out there.
Yes.
And at the moment, he's totally smashing it, which is great news. We've all been gripped here at GCNHQ by dotwatcher.cc. You can keep track of the 1,300-kilometre race, which has 25,000 metres of climbing.
Yes, 25,000 metres. At the sharp end, as we film this, the leaders have covered over 1,000 of those kilometres in just 2 days and 22 hours. Ole Bjørn Smithsjell, I think, possibly, is the leader. And in just shy of 3 days, he has been stationary for 5.5 hours.
In contrast to that, Connor has been stationary for 20 hours, which might explain why currently he's about 350 kilometres off the pace of the leaders.
Much like the UAE tour, Connor is also using this event to recover from normal life.
He might come back detrained.
Certainly with more sleep than you went out there with. Anyway, we're teasing Connor, but honestly, we are in awe of what he's doing, aren't we? And cannot wait for the video that is currently being shot. What we've seen so far looks insanely amazing. We'll show you a clip, actually, from a little video he sent the GCN team. Frankly, all he has actually told us about so far is what he's been eating.
Morning, team. Back out on the road. I'm leaving the first checkpoint. Pretty unreal place. All well, had a good rest last night. Had a little scare riding in. My eyes are a bit bigger than my stomach. At my last food stop and I ate 10 eggs, 2 loaves of bread. And then when I filled with water, I had these nice like fig cookies. And I ate 5 of them, set off and nearly threw up. I thought I had 10 chickens hatching in my stomach. Luckily, digested everything, made it to the checkpoint. Plan today is to kind of just keep on riding. Quite a big section without resupply. Quite rocky in the desert, so just focusing on that and getting through that. It'll take as it comes after. All good though. Woo! Bloody loving it. Cheers for all the support, everyone. Catch you in a bit.
Now, given Connor's favourite two things in the world are eating, as we sort of heard there, and sleeping, I would say, well, neither of those things are particularly conducive to being the best at ultra endurance. You haven't got time for much apart from riding your bike.
This is very true, yeah.
Connor is not the only GCN presenter competing at the Atlas Mountains race, by the way. Our French channel have Maxime Prieur out there. You might remember him from the Pamir Highway video that he did with Connor last year.
Yeah, and if you do remember that video, you'll be all too familiar with his, frankly, inexhaustible demeanour. And he, meanwhile, is currently in 21st, ooh, having been stopped for a total of just over 4 hours.
No. He's crazy, Max.
He
how is that
absolutely
even possible? 4 hours in 3 days.
I know. I mean, I literally have no idea how he's still going. But anyway.
I've said this before. These sorts of feats fill me with fear. The prospect of ever having to do something similar.
What would you rather do? An ultra endurance race where you're basically only allowed to get 5 hours sleep in 5 days, or something like Red Bull Rampage?
Like, I'd do the ultra endurance race because I'd probably die in Red Bull Rampage.
Really?
But yeah, I can't.
I'd be short and quick, over in a moment.
I'd be over, yeah. Yeah, that's so. I'd never be able to do Red Bull Rampage.
All right, but if you had the skills for Red Bull Rampage, if you had the skills to win an ultra endurance race,
or
the skills to do Red Bull Rampage,
I'd do the Red Bull Rampage.
Yeah, see, I think I would as well.
Yeah. Anyway,
pretty cool as well, isn't it?
I mean, people are going to be fascinated by this conversation. Let us know which one you'd do in the comments below.
There you go, right. Science of the week now.
Oh, good, moving
this
on.
This is fascinating. A study published in the Journal of Accident Analysis and Prevention.
Ooh, it is a good one, isn't it?
It is.
It's titled, Do Car Drivers Understand Cyclist Communication Cues? Basically seeks to explore how well car drivers can work out what cyclists are doing. And the answer is not very well.
No.
Unless the visual cue is an arm signal and a straight arm at that. Bent arms, significantly less effective, Si.
That is quite interesting, actually, because I am very guilty of not sticking my arm straight out.
I'm not. Do you know what?
As in, you put your arm straight out?
Yeah, and
I bet you do. You're such a keener. Left turn!
Yeah, like that. So the one thing I remember from my cycling proficiency test, where I was under 11 because it was at my primary school, was that I did well, but he picked me up on my arm signal because I had it like this. He's like, what do you think people are going to see more, that or that?
Ah.
I was like, yeah, well, I take your point. So ever since that moment, I've done like a proper arm straight out, palm that way.
You see, because I passed my cycling proficiency test with distinction.
Did you?
Literally, yeah.
But your bent arm?
No, but that's what I mean. Since then, over the last possibly 30-something years, I've got a bit of slack. It's the point where someone even has pointed out in the comments section, they're like, what on earth is that? What do you think you're signalling? So, yeah, that's like, it's actually something I will take note on. But what was really sobering, as we said, is that if drivers were on a phone call at the time, so not like on their phone, but literally just on a phone call, it significantly reduced their ability to predict what a cyclist would do.
That's quite concerning, isn't it? Imagine if instead of being on a call, they were actually writing a text or scrolling Instagram or something. Like, we know some people do behind the wheel.
Yes. It's actually distracted driving is something that we are looking into at the moment. We've got something on the back burner, so we'll keep you posted on
that.
Stay
tuned.
Yeah. Now, we seem to have had a spate of controversial US cycling bill related news here on GCN in recent weeks, weirdly so. And this week, there is more.
There is, unfortunately, yeah. This one really takes the biscuit, though. So representatives in Iowa have fortunately just dropped a proposed bill that would outlaw cycling on any road with a speed limit higher than 25 miles per hour, which would have effectively criminalised most bike rides.
Yeah. So the speed limit doesn't apply to cyclists. It's a road with a speed limit of 25 miles an hour. I know. It's absolutely mad. Presumably it's been dropped because someone somewhere saw sense, but the fact that it even made it into a bill before people realised that it was utterly, utterly bonkers does make you wonder, doesn't it?
You wouldn't be able to string a ride together, would you?
No.
Whilst we are on politics, two slightly better bits of news. So a British MP has launched a campaign for secure bike lockers at railway stations, recognising that bike theft is quite a major deterrent for people cycling to catch trains.
Yeah, so this comes after the UK Transport Police had rowed back on a previous statement that we mentioned a couple of months ago, that they would no longer investigate bike thefts if the bike had been left for more than 2 hours. Effectively basically saying, fill your boots, nick whatever bike you fancy.
I can't imagine that anything will come of it, given the space needed, not to mention the money. Yeah. But it's nice that they're thinking that way. At least somebody is.
It is nice, yeah. Other than, like, you know, like provisions for cyclists as opposed to banning cyclists. Yeah. And it turns out, actually, that they are also thinking in Ireland too, which is a relief, because we reported a couple of weeks ago that there was apparently a suggestion there to make high-vis and helmets mandatory for cyclists. But clarification last week means that it's actually only people on high-powered e-bikes rather than regular bicycles.
Well, that's a relief.
It is a relief, yeah.
Change of subject now then. It's amazing what comes up each week when scouring the world for cycling-related news, as Si and I do every Monday morning before we record the show on Monday afternoon. Never in my life have I read anything from Truck News before, Si. I'm not sure if you have. But lo and behold, I enjoyed reading about Sean Cranwell, who apparently loves pedals on both his 18-wheel big rig and his two-wheel bike.
Yeah, I love reading this too, right? It's kind of cool to see how he's made a career as a truck driver fit in with his lifetime's passion for cycling. So apparently, he drives with three bikes stashed in the top bunk of his cab, and he's got an indoor trainer in there as well for bad days. And from what I can gather from this article, he gets a ride in every day for a minimum of 90 minutes, up to a maximum of 10 hours.
10 hours?
I know! I mean, that must have been like, I don't know what kind of special day that was. I wouldn't, even if I had 10 hours spare, I don't think I'd ride a bike.
Wouldn't fill it entirely with bike
driving,
would you?
I absolutely would.
That is really cool, though.
It's really cool, yeah.
Let's throw it out to the comment section, actually, as well. How do you fit cycling in around your work? We'd be really interested to hear and read all about that.
Yeah. And if it's because you're Zwifting in zone two whilst you're on a meeting, I'm not sure that counts. No. Right, speaking of interesting, you might remember a young Italian pro cyclist called Andrea Piccolo, who was fired by his team, EF, for allegedly carrying performance-enhancing drugs across the Italian border.
Well, his story then took a bit of a twist when he tried to set up an OnlyFans business. Not quite sure how that went. Checked recently, but last week... not for a couple of months. Last week, he got arrested whilst driving around Naples after he was caught with a wad of fake banknotes and a telescopic baton in his Porsche, wasn't it?
Yeah, illegal telescopic baton, apparently.
Well, apparently illegal to have with you, but not illegal to own. So presumably you can have one stashed in your home.
Weird.
Anyway.
I mean, I guess from that arrest, we should maybe infer that his OnlyFans is not going so well. You wouldn't have fake Euros, you'd have real Euros.
Well, I don't know what goes on in some of those OnlyFans films.
No? If you know, get along in the comments section. Right, moving on. Some Zwift news for you now. And the Zwift Games makes its return for 2026. So it's beginning next week and it ends on the 29th of March. It's open to any level of Zwifter. You have to complete five main stages, all of which apparently are on brand new routes. And then there are two special stages, 6A and 6B.
Each stage will be available for you to ride for a week, and the stages get progressively harder as the games continue. And the last stage includes steering experience for the full gamified experience. I think if you do miss any of the stages, there's a week or two at the end, isn't there, where you can catch up on what you missed out on. Normally, yeah.
Yeah, nice. That's one. It's super popular, isn't it, Zwift Games? So, yeah. Put that one in your diaries. Some tech news now. And Canyon actually came out with an interesting stat last week in the wake of the Cyclocross World Championships. So they reckon that their InFlight, which is their cyclocross bike, is the most successful race bike ever in any cycling discipline, be that road, mountain bike, track, cyclocross. I mean, gravel, it's not been around long enough, really, has it? And that's if you measure it by UCI wins.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't seem a bad shout when you start delving into it, does it? The only other bike I can think of that would rival that, at least in terms of world titles, of which the InFlight has 16, incidentally, is the old British cycling track bikes that were raced from, 2002 through to 2012?
Just before the London Olympics, I think, when they got a bit of an upgrade. The difference, though, is that you couldn't buy the British cycling track bikes.
Oh.
I don't think.
Yeah, well, maybe not, no. I can't remember when that rule came in from the UCI. You had to be able to buy the equipment that pros were using, but anyway.
Yeah.
Something used by the pros that you can buy, though, is this little beauty, Si. You brought it up with you?
Oh, I have, yeah.
From Sellitalia. This is unbelievable. So this is the SLR racing replica. Light that when Si first picked up the box, he didn't think the saddle was inside it.
No, I thought Alex Payton had already nicked the saddle.
You can understand that.
It weighs the same as a cardboard box, 109 grams, if you're interested. Now, the reason it's a pro replica is because it's the saddle that is used and been requested by pro cyclists. So it's got the thinnest shell, apparently at 1.5 millimetres, but unrivaled stiffness. So yes, read super flipping hard. Something that is, as I said, apparently requested by leathery buttocked pro cyclists. Sellitalia say that it's down to a new carbon fibre core, which is created in collaboration with an Austrian company called Fibionic. It looks cool. Alex was telling me to look at the carbon skeleton in there.
Yeah, very nice. It has got padding on it,
we should say,
but just not much flex built into the shell itself.
No.
Pros love it, apparently, and you can buy it too.
You can.
I might use that for my Grand Fondo on Sunday.
I mean, that is very, very firm.
It's only 92Ks, though, so if I average 45, it's only 2 hours.
And it is the tarmac, like, just buttery smooth?
I think so.
Okay. Well, you probably can then. Do you want that?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Save a bit of bit of weight, 109 grams.
Yeah, nice. I'm basically raiding GCN HQ, including presenters' stashes of the best, fastest equipment we have ready for Sunday.
You will have no excuses left, Dan.
No.
Unfortunately. Last week, we talked about when we would be back on Ruvi for one final group ride after Connor Dunn made a boo-boo and missed it.
Oh, yeah.
So listen up, folks. It's going to be me. I'm looking forward to riding with everyone on Thursday, 5 p.m. European time, 4 p.m. UK time, 11 a.m. East Coast time, and 8 a.m. West Coast time.
Which is probably about 3 a.m. in Melbourne,
yeah.
I imagine.
Sounds like a challenge. Any Aussies that join, you get tough nut points, basically. So the route will be the Tossa de Mar route, which comes from the new Girona collection. And it's going to be a banded ride, so you only have to ride as hard as you want and we'll all stay together. And it's going to be like a nice, short, quick one, really. So 16 kilometres on a rolling route. They're estimating about half an hour for that one. Yeah, cannot wait. See
really
you there.
Nice too. Lastly, we have a new competition / giveaway for you. So if you missed out on the Vision 5D carbon one-piece cockpit from the other month, you can now get your hands on the Vision Metron 6D carbon cockpit.
What?
One better.
Yeah.
It's got a bit more compliance compared to the 5D, and it's got a straight bar as opposed to a 10-degree forward sweep, but you get the same super sleek look with the option to run fully integrated cables, and it is super aero as well.
Yeah, okay, so if you want to enter that competition, then we will pop a link in the description beneath this video so you can get straight through to the competition page. That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, good luck to everybody who enters. And just finally, you can incidentally still join myself and Lorraine. We've extended our group ride on Zwift during work time on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So go to the GCN Club on Zwift, click on the plus button next to those rides on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we'll see you then.
How on earth have you blagged this? Is this going to carry on in perpetuity?
Yes. Yeah. Well, like I said in the original video site, I was hoping that Lorraine and I could make this a habit so it could carry on indefinitely. Next up, it is hack/bodge of the week. You know how to get involved, but I'm going to tell you anyway. globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. The first one this week comes in from John. Drainpipe fender. A guy came into our shop for some work on his old bike. He had this drainpipe fabricated into a fender.
Okay. So for podcast listeners, it's not just a smooth drainpipe. It's a drainpipe that's kind of shaped like the shell off
like
a centipede or a millipede or like a woodlouse or something. Yeah, it looks like you've got a giant centipede wedged in your fork crown. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Look at the gaffer tape. Silver gaffer tape's been used to tie it to the down tube.
Well, has it? No, you couldn't tie it to the down tube because then you wouldn't be able to steer. Presumably that's protecting the down tube from your drainpipe armadillo. Well,
it looks like it's touching the down tube, doesn't it?
Maybe the gaffer tape is holding the water bottle cage on. Yeah. Or the mini pump that's also covered in gaffer tape.
Probably don't need to go into this much detail to decide that this is a bodge.
Oh, massive bodge, yeah. I mean, it's probably fairly effective. I'd
imagine it is. It does look very effective, actually, not just fairly.
Yeah.
Something about the width of it looks like it would catch a lot of water.
But it wouldn't stop it going on your feet, your bottom of your trousers. And that's one of the key things, I think, for a good town bike fender. So a lot of people telling me off for my fenders on my town bike that I put up on GCN Tech on Sunday. So for the record, they were the cheapest fenders I could find and they are non-adjustable.
Yeah.
Aesthetically pleasing.
I was adamant about that in the office earlier.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm completely, it's just, you can't adjust it. Yeah. It is what it is. So I'm sorry, guys. Anyway, so we're saying massive bodge. This one, presumably?
We are.
All right, thanks for sending that in, John. Next up, we get this one from Peter Yan. First glance, I thought it was Peter Pan, but no, Peter Yan, the Roubaix-proof electrical tape mount. So this is a picture of a Wahoo Element bolt, I think. He says, 50K into 160km gravel-heavy tribute to Paris-Roubaix while hitting a technical forest single track, a steering error sent me into a branch, snapping off my Wahoo head unit. Oh, man.
A steering error. I like that description.
Yeah. With 110K of unknown gravel sectors and cobblestones ahead, I faced a dilemma. Ride one-handed while holding my GPS or give up. But neither was an option. I had a strip of electrical tape wrapped around my top tube, originally there to protect the frame from a top tube bag I wasn't even carrying that day. So I peeled the tape off my frame and used it to fix my Wahoo onto the broken mount. There you go.
I mean, we would normally say hack for this because it got him through, didn't it, Peter? But I'm very reluctant to say hack for something that looks like that.
Well, also,
half the screen's covered.
The thing that jumped out at me, Dan, was the fact that Peter had some electrical tape wrapped around his top tube left over from an earlier escapade. That is a red flag, like, particularly that colour. So, I mean, I'm torn, like you. It got him through the
bodge.
Ride.
I'm going to say bodge.
Yeah.
I can't say hack for that. Look at it, it's a monstrosity.
I tell you what, though, Peter, I will upgrade my bodge to a hack if you send us the route, because 160K gravel-heavy tribute to Paris-Roubaix, including technical forest single track, sounds right up my street. So, send us the route and we might change our minds.
But. Okay. Yeah. Right then, moving on to this one from James Hall, smart trainer hack at kids baseball. I put together this setup so I can use a Wahoo kicker snap while watching my son play baseball. Unfortunately, the speed sensor on the snap doesn't work in bright sunshine. So I present you a hack, the battery pack that plugs into a kicker snap and lasts for over 10 hours, and a bodge, a cardboard shopping bag to cover the flywheel and electronics. I often get compliments from opposition team parents who are often very cold.
That doesn't look very cold.
It doesn't look cold there, does it?
Maybe it looks, can be deceiving.
Now, I spend too many of my Sunday mornings and afternoons on the side of a football pitch watching my son Jude, and I do get extremely cold. But I don't think I could bring myself to set up an indoor trainer outdoors next to a football field. I just wouldn't want to answer the questions. Or the looks. I wouldn't want the looks. Even though I would undoubtedly be far warmer.
So I too watch my fair share of sport from the sidelines these days. And whilst
you
I...
You could do some heat training at swimming.
I mean, I absolutely could. I think this is quite a cool hack, actually, because, you know, if you're there for like a few hours a week, can be pretty dead time, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like I'd want to go for a run. I wouldn't want to miss out on the baseball or whatever it is. Yeah. So yeah, I've got to say that's a hack.
Okay.
Yeah, just a shame about the plastic bag or the paper bag. But, you know, if it works, it works.
Well, right? Yeah, for safety, I guess. All right, I'll go with hack as well then.
Okay, all right. God, that's an unlikely hack, isn't it? There's going to be a ripple of dissent in the comments section, isn't it? But yeah, thanks, James, for sending that one in.
Probably lose 100,000 subscribers with that.
Possibly, or at least some of the three people that get to the end, because we do think it's
more than that,
three.
We got about 15 comments last week.
Really?
Going up every week.
Well, it's going to be like seven now, isn't it? Because they've just switched off out of disgust. Hugh M. sent this next one in, though. It's the Gubbins Carrier. I saw this on an early morning ride. Not sure if a bodged-up billy cart or a hack for carrying all the gubbins. So this is a supermarket trolley with two large, what are we looking at, kind of like BMX-type wheels welded onto the back. Hmm. So not quite sure what's going on.
The original trolley wheels are at the front. It doesn't look like there's any way to sort of hitch it onto the back of a bike or anything. So it must go on the back of something, surely.
Well, you'd think so.
I mean, it's not going to be any more efficient just pushing that versus a normal trolley, is it?
Also, you'd hope it would attach to a bike. Otherwise, this is a cycling show and we've got a whole segment looking at a shopping trolley.
Yeah, just because it's got wheels doesn't mean you can send it in. Although we have spent the last 2 minutes looking at it and chatting about it.
So anyway, Bodge
for that one.
Yeah.
All right, thanks again for sending your hacks and bodges in. Don't forget, they can be your own or those you see out and about. We look forward to seeing what you send in for next week.
Time now for Caption of the Week, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner next week, but we'll start, as always, with the results from last week.
This was the photo that we gave you last week. This is Cadel Evans handing the trophy over to Tobias Lund after winning his Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. Our winner this week is Lee Torrey One, who put caption, "Hey Cadel, long time no see."
It's not bad, that is it.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
S-E-A, for those of you listening.
Not quite as good as yours from last week.
Nah.
Which was hoping you'd give us a wave.
Way off.
Yeah. But still, Lee, we thought it was good enough. So, yeah.
What an insult.
Well, I mean, it's
just
true,
about
isn't it?
Good enough, Lee. Yeah, right in.
I mean, we don't...
And we'll begrudgingly send you a GCN Camelback water bottle.
Honesty is the best policy, I think. Okay. So, you know.
All right. Well, yeah. Don't be too honest with my caption coming up.
All right.
Here's this week's photo. This is Remco Evenepoel of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe winning. He's won 6 races already this year, Si, out of 8 days of racing.
But they were easy races, weren't they?
Yeah, not quite as easy as UAE Tour Stage 2, but easy nonetheless.
Well...
They weren't easy.
UAE Tour Stage 2, still got to win the sprint, right?
Yeah, probably
with lots of fresh
that.
Legs, no.
Lorena Vives would have trounced him.
I think
she
would.
She's been like miles ahead of everyone. Anyway, I will get you started. Here goes then. Red Bull gives you rings.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, that is actually good, Dan.
Thanks very much.
Do we know what the telephone gesture was about?
No idea. Last time I saw that, it was Mark Cavendish when they were sponsored by HTC.
Yeah.
At High Road.
I mean, that feels like it makes sense. But yeah. This is an unusual one. He's going to UAE Tour, isn't he?
He is indeed.
You going to see him out there?
I will be. I'm taking a grip strengthometer with me, so I'm hoping to persuade Remco Evenepoel to show how strong he is.
Really?
Yeah.
And what are you going to infer from his grip strength?
Not just him on his own. Well, I mean, we can see whether he's a legend or not, really, can't we? Once and for all.
I mean, I don't personally read much into grip strength.
I can see why.
Yes, yeah, It's a test I'd rather forget.
Yeah.
But I think I was a bit unwell that day.
Okay. Yeah. So if you are racing the UAE Tour next week and you fancy showing what grip strength you've got, just come over and see me at Stage 1 or Stage 2 start. Or if you know somebody that's racing there, just let them know. So I'm afraid they're all going to say no.
Oh, I think you'll get some competitive pro cyclists.
Hopefully, yeah. You only need one. I don't think if you get one at the sign-on bit where everyone's together... Then everyone else will be like, what did he get? Oh, I'm going to have a go.
Well, and they're all going to be fresh as well. No tired legs at UAE Tour.
Slightly worried about causing an injury for the start of the race.
Imagine that.
Remco Evenepoel out for the season after hand strain.
With DI2 and disc brakes, you don't really need your wrists anymore, do you? So you'd be fine, mate.
Anyway, got off track. Put your best captions in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. You know what's coming. We've picked a few of our favourite comments out from last week's videos, and then we'll let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. We'll start underneath last week's show. Assam Baton wrote in to say, honestly, wheel sucker, the guy's like 20 metres behind, just a crybaby. If you don't want to be followed, then don't train on public roads. Now, I honestly don't mind when somebody sucks my wheel, but I hate it when they suck my wheel and once rested, they shoot out and disappear into the distance.
Crybaby?
Yeah, sounds like
slightly,
it.
Slightly, yeah.
Maybe he's being sarcastic or ironic or something.
Possibly. Mm. Very hard to read irony in the comment section sometimes. But no, I did have a chuckle about that one. Maggie Irwin said, I'm glad you acknowledge that women cyclists have very different lived experiences that make someone hopping onto your wheel uninvited not only an annoyance, but also dangerous. It is a privilege to feel safe enough to assume that a stranger riding on your wheel is just a wheel sucker and not a potential threat of violence. Also, she adds, I've had people make their presence known and politely ask, which is fine. Just don't assume you have the right to sit on in someone else's space. So yeah, I thought it was really important to read that one out. And then I chuckled at this one. Amanda Jane, I've only once had a wheel sucker latch onto me. I found it bizarre as I'm not a speedy rider. And then I wondered if he was perving on my butt. So I had to stop and let him go ahead and find someone else to latch onto. Mm. So I'd never thought about whether people were perving on my butt when they're wheel sucking.
I've always thought that's presumably what they're there for. They're behind
on
me.
My wheel or...
No, mine. On yours. Yeah. So I can understand why they're there.
I mean, they're definitely not perving at my ankles, are they?
No. So, no, yeah. At that point they go past.
Well, yeah, unless that's the bit that's giving them extra draft. So, yeah.
Jonathan travels, but right then, Si, here's why you are totally wrong, bro. Public roads are for everyone. If someone is drafting, deal with it. There's no personal space when out in public. Read the highway code and understand it, Simon.
I think that assertion of there is no public personal space when out in public is wrong. Mm. I don't think that would stand up in a court of law if you
because depends where you are, doesn't it? I mean, if you're a music gig, there's no sort of personal space there, is there?
Well, yeah, but if you're in like the middle of a field and someone comes and stands next to you, I think you could argue that they're in your personal space. Yeah. Anyway, there we go.
I like the fact that Jonathan wasn't passive-aggressive, he was just aggressive.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. I hope he never ends up in my personal space. And judging by his YouTube name, there's a risk because he travels. So yeah. He might end up in Bristol or Bath one day.
And I wouldn't want to get in Si's personal space, having seen his grip strength.
Absolutely, and my ankles, yeah. Right, and then I did chuckle at this one. El Marcos said, I always intend to watch the show, sorry, right through to the end. But you see, I have this drinking game in which every time Si says fair play, I drink a shot. So I don't usually get to see past the cycling short segment. I have no idea that I said it that much.
No.
Yeah, but fair play, Al.
No.
Fair play. Fair play.
That's why you said it earlier. Well, I'll try and pick you up on it in future shows.
Thank you very much, yeah.
And underneath why I love, but sometimes hate power meters with Connor, Rocker 555, but I love power meters in my indoor training. But when I go outside, I like to go chill, enjoying the ride. I think a lot of people like that.
Yeah, it's good shout, that.
Matej Zabski, but I love that a power meter makes riding in the wind with a loaded bike or on a suboptimal surface much more enjoyable. I can see I'm doing my normal watts. Don't have to get frustrated about going slow. I am with Matej on that.
Yeah, that's another good one, isn't it? And then underneath, if zone 2 is good, could zone 3 be better? Aaron C Media said, if zone 3 is good, zone 6 must be twice as good.
Yeah, a lot of comments along these lines. Yeah. Oliveira N1D, ever since I started training in zone 15, I've never been dropped on Sunday group ride. Highly recommended.
Yeah, and then Nomad Bitmad, 2027, why you should be training in zone 1.
Yep, I'll do that video.
Yeah, do people recommending zone 1 training? You need a lot of hours spare.
Yeah, you'd need to be doing it at the Atlas Mountains race, I think, with 5 hours sleep over 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, pros spend a lot of time training in zone 1 because they're doing 30 hours a week, right? Yeah. It's the only time it works.
Finally, only if we tried to copy Tadej Pogačar's hardest training session, Gilbert Tang put, forget Pogačar, he's a one in several billion outlier. What you folks are able to do is, I find, even more astonishing, especially given your workloads off the bike and how much care and effort you put into these videos.
But sorry, Gilbert, you know Dan takes time off work specifically to cycle, yeah. Right? I mean, it's like...
Take time out of my lunchtime, out of my lunch break, to dedicate myself to the channel. But what's even more impressive, continues Gilbert, is that you've convinced Dan to so consistently wear that snazzy moustache and talk with a French accent. Genuinely don't know how he does it. Impressive.
I mean, there is a similarity between you and Max.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
You just look a bit older than him, mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, he carried on doing his ultra endurance races.
That's good point, actually. He's what, 7 years your junior, but he's not catching careful.
So I did notice a few more grey hairs when I was out in Spain with him recently.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you better watch out. The Lawn Experiment said, Ollie, you've come such a long way over the past 5 years. Congratulations. He did actually do quite a good ride that day, didn't he?
Well, he did, yeah. As Oranya Tutors wrote, 226 watts for 7 hours is crazy, man. Kudos to Ollie. Yeah, he's still pretty good.
If you look carefully on the video, though, you can see that he's getting dropped at the end.
Can you?
Yeah. Sebas and Max were like sticking the boot in at the end. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right then, coming up on the channel this week, on Thursday, all I've got written down here, so hopefully you know more, is Fat Road Bike.
Yes, I mean, that's not going to be the title, but that is the essence of it. So I've been spending the last few months riding a fat road bike, and I absolutely love it. The question, though, that I'm asking and trying to answer is it the future?
What is a fat road bike?
I've got 40 mil slick tyres on there, super fast 40 mil tyres, and it's been blooming amazing, but is it the future?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, stay tuned, find out the answer.
Find out on Thursday.
And then on Saturday, all being well, because it's an absolute monster of a video to put together, basically, the reason we can't have the cities that we dream of, clean, safe, easy to get around cities, is for this one reason. I won't tell you what it is, but I've been investigating. I went to a protest last week. I know.
Blimey.
I know, yeah. I mean, I wasn't protesting.
Oh, okay.
I was there strictly as media.
Right.
I was pretending to be a journalist, actually.
Observing a protest.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. But I didn't want to be counted as a protester. So it was really hard. So I was kind of like hanging at the back, waving a microphone, just in case anyone thought that I was...
As opposed to a placard.
Exactly. Nice. Yeah. Oh, no, maybe they thought my microphone was a placard.
Yeah. What's he protesting? GCN, what does that mean? meanwhile, on Sunday, you might know that Ollie and Alex have been out in Saudi recently in Alula. They are going to bring us their epic road ride that they did when they were out there. And it truly was epic. They had a headwind the entire day.
But it looked so nice.
It did, didn't it? Yeah. The pictures they sent back were incredible.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see that one. That should be absolutely wicked.
Fantastic. Right, well, that brings us to the end of
it
this
week's
show.
It does bring us to the end.
Once again, what number are we on?
683 it was.
683, crikey. Do you think we'll still be around for 1,000?
Well, it doesn't sound like that far away, but then when you do the maths, it is quite a long way,
isn't it? It's about 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, probably, mate.
Yeah.
Can't imagine much better things to do on my Monday afternoon.
Right, well, I'll see you then, Si. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for watching all the way through to the end, all 15 of you.